nodded, and he turned onto his side to face me, wrapping both of his arms around me and pulling me close to his chest. He gently stroked my hair, and my heart exploded from the sweetness of it. I couldn't keep my eyes open long when his fingers started to rub my scalp in back and forth motions, right above my hairline, the exact same way my mother used to do. Her fingers would circle my head until it prickled and went numb, helping me fall asleep.
"What are your plans for today?"
Kale asked after a few seconds of silence. "Nothing, actually." I couldn't see Kale's face because my head was on his chest. His fingers were rubbing my head, creating that calm, numbing sensation that was my favorite part. It was such an intimate feeling that I hadn't felt since my mom left. I started to tell him that, but he spoke first.
"If you're up for it, I wanted to show you my place. I don't have PT or any appointments today. The duplex is a complete mess and in the middle of being renovated, but I wanted to take you there."
He sounded shy by the time he finished. I couldn't hide the excitement in my voice. "You do?"
"Yes, of course I do."
"I would love to see it."
"Cool."
He smiled. "Cool." I kissed his grinning mouth.
"You need more days off. Imagine if we had an entire week to ourselves. No family dinners, no work in our way,"
he said against my lips. His fingers moved from my scalp to the ends of my hair. I loved the way his thick fingers wrapped around my dark strands, gently twisting between and around them. I felt so dazed by his attention, so content and warm. I realized that I could actually sleep if I wanted to. That was a first for me, to be so relaxed that I could fall asleep before the sun went down. It had everything to do with him. Kale started humming a song and told me about this little-known band he found in a bar in Kentucky after he graduated basic training, and how he recently heard their song on the radio. I smiled as he hummed a few more bars and started to kiss down his chin, around his collarbone and shoulders. His skin was so soft under my lips, and his body shuddered when I kissed the scar tissue that framed his shoulder blade. Kale's phone started to ring on the nightstand. He jumped up and I moved away as he grabbed it, my eyes reading the screen.
"It's Mendoza,"
he said, showing me the phone. I nodded as he answered.
"Hey, you—"
Kale started to speak, but he was cut off by shouting.
Hey, man, slow down."
Kale's voice suddenly was different. He was now Sergeant Martin.
"Where are you?"
Kale was out of my bed, sliding his shirt down his chest. He grabbed his jacket from the floor and put it on. I didn't know what to do as I sat there on the bed and Kale moved around me. He was totally focused on Mendoza, in full-on mission mode.
"I won't tell Gloria or anyone where you are."
Kale looked at me.
"Don't go inside, just wait outside. I'll be there in 15 max. Don't go back inside,"
he repeated. I got out of the bed and moved toward Kale. He held his finger up to tell me to keep quiet.
"I'll be there soon. Everything's fine. Don't talk to or call anyone else until I get there. You could get reported,"
Kale instructed. He seemed to have such great empathy. His soul glowed from the inside. It astounded and impressed me. He was showing me what a thoughtful man looked like. Beautiful brown skin, 1,000 seas wide sympathetic eyes, and a considerate heart. It struck me that I hadn't seen this in a man before, at least not in real life. But Kale showed me exactly what compassion looked like. "Is everything okay?" I asked him. He nodded.
"Mendoza, he's drunk and started saying these guys were spying on him. He's slipping and I need to get there."
"Spying?" Kale sighed, rubbing his forehead with the back of his hand.
"Paranoia from constantly being in situations where people are trying to kill you," he said.
His words rattled me.
"I'm sorry, I have to go."
He kissed my forehead, then my cheeks, then my mouth.
"I'll be back as soon as I'm done there."
"Do you want me to go with you?" I asked, knowing the answer, but wanting to offer anyway. He shook his head.
"I told him I wouldn't tell anyone. If he sees you, he won't trust me. I need to get there before he starts a fight."
His fingers moved quickly to lace up his boots. He He stopped tying them for a second and looked up at me.
I appreciate the offer, though.
I had a really bad feeling about whatever was going on. My stomach ached as he stood up and met my eyes.
Don't worry about me, okay?
Kale tried to assure me. Right. I rolled my eyes at him. We both knew that worrying was my specialty. I followed Kale through the hallway to the kitchen door. The sun was so bright, it clashed with my thoughts. In my mind, a storm was brewing. Mendoza will be okay, right? I asked him. I was aware that I barely knew the guy, but I could tell how much he meant to Kale. He nodded.
Yeah, Kale. He's going to be okay,
he reassured me, and stepped outside.
Lock the door,
I heard him say. I smiled at that, and the way he called me Kale. Only Austin and my mom ever called me that, and I really, really liked the way Kale said it so effortlessly. After I watched his Bronco pull out of my driveway, I returned to my room and fell into bed thinking about how many soldiers had demons chasing them long after they had left the battlefield. Home wasn't such a safe place for them once they returned. I drifted off to sleep, wondering how many demons were chasing my soldier, and if they were too strong for him to defeat. Chapter 55. When I opened my eyes, it was early evening and the sun was setting. It took me a few seconds to realize that Kale hadn't come back yet. I went to our text thread and there was nothing from him. A bubble of uncertainty filled my lungs. I'm sure he was okay and just busy handling Mendoza. He wasn't ghosting me, I told myself again. As I debated texting Kale, Elodie sent a picture of herself in a pink sweater with her short blonde hair in two low pigtails. How adorable. When I asked her where she was, she said she was at another FRG gig, a cookout this time, and that she'd been invited on a girls' trip to Atlanta to do some shopping. She was excited to browse for baby clothes and the latest gear, but even more excited that she'd been included, spur of the moment, to go along. I nearly asked her if she'd heard from Kale, but I didn't want to seem overly interested. She must already be wondering what the hell was going on between us. I threw in a load of laundry before turning to the unwashed pile of dishes and glasses in the sink. I hated hand washing and reminded myself that one day I would finally buy a dishwasher. I hadn't done much and had slept most of the day, but my head ached, and I took a Tylenol and gulped down a glass of water before making my way back to my room. I lay on the bed, staring at the ceiling, thinking of Kale. I remembered the first day I saw him in the lobby at work. The mysterious client who later refused to take off his sweats or let me touch his right leg. Now he wasn't a stranger, but he still hadn't shown me his legs. Not once. He was always dressed from the waist down, and I cared too much about his trauma to force him to explain. There were so many other beautiful parts of him that he didn't keep a secret. Maybe he would tell me, or even show me the rest, when he was ready. I remembered how close we felt a few hours ago, the way I held his hand in mine. Holding his hand like that, touching each of his fingers, tracing the little creases around his knuckles. His hand in mine was the best remedy to ease the paranoia of the secrets he kept. I loved his hands, how big they were, how strong. I thought of how they held me, touched me, comforted me. I dozed off again and woke up to Kale standing over me, watching me sleep. He looked like a prince out of a movie, wearing a white t-shirt and gray sweats. Maybe I was groggy. Maybe I was losing my mind. But he was so beautiful, and I missed him so much. I yanked on his arm, bringing him to me.
Hey.
He curled his body into mine. I clung to him like he had been away at war. How is Mendoza? I felt unsettled, but didn't want to ruin the moment now that he was back. Silence fell between us. He took a deep breath, and I held mine.
Did you enjoy your nap?
He asked, completely ignoring my question. I had to make a choice. Press him for an answer about Mendoza, and risk him closing off and turning distant, or let him decide what parts of him I could access. I nodded, trying to keep my emotions at bay. I lifted my head up to kiss him, and his arms wrapped around me, hugging my body as close to his as it could get.
I missed you. Too much,
he said against my forehead. And even though I knew this was too good to be true and the red flags were piling up, I held on to him and decided to take whatever it was he would give me. I should have remembered that not all fairy tales end in happily ever after. Chapter 56. With Elodie off on her weekend girls' trip, Cale and I played house for a couple days, never leaving limbo. I begged off work, ensuring with Molly that my clients would reschedule. Cale and I stayed in the house and ordered food when we felt like it. He made me want to do nothing except lie next to him all day. Not even having sex, just listening to his theories about the world, how it began and how it would end. When he sensed the conversation was too heavy and too bleak, he switched topics to show me a YouTube video on the conspiracy that Shakespeare had a ghostwriter. I rolled my eyes, telling him that insulting Shakespeare was a crime in my house, and he lifted his body on top of mine, offering kisses to avoid any penalty. What I felt for Cale was something between sweet infatuation and total annihilation. It was powerful and raw. He was fierce as an animal, and yet so kind and gentle. He was a bundle of contradictions. Even so, it felt secure and calm to be with him, not the chaos that being in love advertised. I was happy in this moment, when I stopped thinking about the short time we would have together. It was terrifying to let my guard down, but it was thrilling to immerse myself in this intimacy with Cale. As he slept on my chest, and again when he woke up in the middle of the night asking for someone named Nielsen, then shouting Philip's name, he was drenched in sweat. He pulled me close to hug him, moved my hair from my ear, and whispered, "Run!" A chill went through my entire body, but I didn't move. I hugged him back and gently rubbed his shoulder, telling him that everything would be okay, even if I knew that was a promise I couldn't deliver. Cale's war trauma made my problems and worries feel small and insignificant. I made a commitment to myself that, because of Cale, I would confront my fears and stop letting the terrible unknown control everything. I deserved to let go and live, really live. And he deserved the version of me who didn't need an answer to every question. We had spent all the prior afternoon, evening, and night in bed. Then finally it was Sunday morning, and I had to go to work in the late afternoon. I absolutely had to show up today, or Molly would probably come to my house and drag me to the spa herself. Cale and I had baked Elodie's can of cinnamon rolls for breakfast, and I made a pot of coffee that tasted like shit, but I drank it anyway. The rolls were gooey and warm and yummy, even sweeter when Cale kissed me with the faint taste of icing on his lips. "When this ends, what do we do?" I asked flatly.
"What ends?"
He was quiet as the seconds ticked by, but I sensed he knew exactly what I was talking about.
"We remember this,"
he finally said, sealing his words with a kiss.
I had lost count of them at this point.
I wanted to start all over and have another first, second, third kiss with him. We were behaving so domestically. I had lent Cale a set of Philip's PT clothing from Elodie's bureau to wear while he washed his sweats and t-shirt in my kitchen laundry. I pushed a pile of my laundry out of his way to make room as he transferred his wet clothes from the washer to the dryer, and then went back to my room to put on my jeans and a comfortable, baggy sweatshirt. A few minutes later, Cale appeared in my doorway with all my clean clothes, neatly folded, and asked where they should go. I shrugged and motioned to the dresser, and he set them down on top, then followed me into the bathroom. While I brushed my teeth, he swished some mouthwash around his mouth, opting for something antiseptic and medicinal in lieu of my minty toothpaste. Making breakfast together, doing laundry, sharing dental hygiene. This is what people who get married do, I thought to myself. And Cale had even convinced me to go to the mall to fix my laptop. More old married couple behavior. The local mall was crowded, and the parking lot was stressing me out as Cale circled in his giant truck, looking for a space. When he finally found one, he slowly and stealthily parked backward in a tight spot right next to a tall light post. "I hate malls," I said as we walked through the noisy entrance. The ceilings were low, every wall was brown or tan, and the lights were so freaking bright that I wished I had worn a hoodie so I could crawl inside it. There were people everywhere. Kale looked around and turned his face to me.
"Do you want to go back to the car and I can take care of the laptop?"
I smiled. "How can you be so selfless?"
"It's no big deal. I know a tech guy who works here at a kiosk. He's really fast, cheap, and won't be shady."
Kale dangled his keys as a last offer for me to escape the mall adventure. I shook my head and kept walking. He read the doubt on my face.
"I'll do the talking."
"Yeah?" I asked, hiding my face from him. I'd never had a friend, let alone a boyfriend, who paid this much attention to the way I felt and went out of their way to make my life easier. Kale didn't say anything. He just smiled and grabbed my hand. He looked so good, and I was with him. He liked me. He picked me, and that made me feel beyond special. I wished someone from my high school who had made fun of my weight or acne could see me now. Well, I looked like shit still, and Kale was way out of my league. I kept slowing down, looking for a mirror and regretting not having put makeup on before we left.
"You okay?"
he asked, squeezing my hand a little. I nodded. "I'm just thinking of all the reasons that you're too good for me and why you should be embarrassed to be holding my hand in public." Kale's laugh was deep, coming from the core of his body.
"What?"
He held our hands up in the air, in an out-of-character move for him. My tummy twisted. I let my thoughts turn into words. "You're totally out of my league." His expression was one of both confusion and calmness.
"Who's deciding this? Just you?"
I nodded.
"You couldn't be more wrong,"
he said, as we passed a pretzel stand. The smell wafted through the air and my stomach grumbled. How could I be hungry after eating half a container of cinnamon rolls? There was a long line for the pretzels, and the food court of the mall was beyond packed. Voices filled the space, all the way to the ceiling, with babies crying against the background noise of deep fryers bubbling and burgers sizzling as we walked past Wendy's. A couple in front of us were arguing over losing a receipt for a jacket the woman bought the man. They were in their 40s, maybe, and I watched them as we walked behind them. They went from bickering to laughing and back to bickering. I imagined being a 40-something with Kale, arguing in the mall over trivial things. I had to rein in my thoughts. They were way ahead of me, running wild.
"Almost there,"
Kale reassured me, stroking his thumb over the back of my hand in his. As we got closer, I unlocked our fingers and wrapped both of my arms around one of his, gluing myself to his side. I couldn't remember the last time I had been around so many people at once, but I was relieved to have Kale with me. We approached a kiosk that looked like a jewelry counter, but instead of sparkling rings and necklaces, its glass cases held tablet and laptop brands I'd never heard of. There was a row of smartwatches and cell phones in cases plastered with "deal" stickers, several of them announcing, "Fix your cracked screen here for cheap." The line was short, only one person ahead of us. And when the woman spoke, I immediately recognized her voice. Sure enough, Kale did too, and as he said her name, I clung like a flea to his side.
"Turner?"
He used his free hand to tap her shoulder. "Martin!" Her face lit up at the sight of him. Not that I blamed her, but I felt possessive and unreasonably jealous. My lungs burned as she reached for him like she was going to hug him. I let go of his arm, moving a few feet away, defensively. If they started to hug in front of me, my eyes were going to melt off my face. Kale reached for the baggy sleeve of my sweatshirt to pull me close, dodging the hug she tried to give him. Her arms fell flat at her sides as he laced his fingers through mine. Her eyes instantly went blank, hiding any thoughts she might have been having. She was a soldier, after all. In most romances, this would be the chapter where I find out that Kale has a secret past with her, or worse, He pretends not to know me. He was confusing me by doing the opposite of what I expected. Why do I always assume the worst? What are you doing here, of all places? Turner asked Kale, not looking at me. She was smiling again, focused on him. Kale held up my laptop with the arm that wasn't holding my hand.
Her laptop is fucked up, so we came to fix it.
We. I breathed a sigh of relief. Turner straightened her stance, and I was a bit terrified of how small I felt next to her. She was wearing makeup today and had her civilian clothes on, unlike when we ran into her at the commissary. Not that she didn't look great in her uniform, but wow, her personal style was cool. She was wearing a black halter that tied across the back, with cutouts on the sides that exposed a lot of skin. Her jeans were loose everywhere except her hips and butt. She looked like she belonged on an Instagram account full of look-at-me vacation pictures or in an engagement photo shoot with a man like Kale. She was definitely on his level, unlike me with my sloppy clothes and blotchy skin. I inched a little closer to Kale.
This is Karina. You've met her.
He introduced me. I waved, offering a quiet hello. She seemed to analyze every feature of my face and clothes. Oh, Fisher's sister. Now I see it, she said, laughing. I hated that I didn't get her joke. You know my brother? She nodded, flipping her dark hair over her shoulder. Her fingernails were perfectly manicured and painted a light pink, skating the line of dress regulations. She bit the edge of her lip and wrapped the ends of her glossy hair around her finger, the perfect metaphor for my inward spiral. Of course I know Austin. Who doesn't? She said it in a way that felt like it meant something more. And your dad, he... Kale interrupted whatever she was going to say.
Ray, my man!
He called out to an older black man with a thick gray mustache standing behind the counter.
Martin, haven't seen you in a while,
Ray said in a raspy voice, obviously happy to see Kale.
I barely recognize you out of uniform. What brings you in?
Kale gave Turner a quick nod goodbye and turned his attention back to me and Ray to explain what was wrong with the laptop. Ray said it would be an easy fix, but that he was so backed up with work, it would need to be left there for a day or two.
Friends and family discount.
He winked, and Kale handed him his credit card without giving me a chance to protest. Not that I would have. I was still inside my head, wondering if Kale had dated Turner or, worse, had slept with her. Actually, I didn't know which was worse, but I'd surely prefer neither. This growing web of acquaintances connected to the people in my life was rattling me. Chapter 57. My shift that afternoon was long, and I could barely keep my eyes open. It was now evening, and I had already had 3 scheduled appointments. Stuart, who was one of my favorite clients, would be the last. Going to the mall this morning with Kale had depleted most of my allotted daily energy, but the way he held my hand the whole drive home replenished it. I wondered what he was doing now. I hadn't heard from Kale since he dropped me off at home. He mentioned he would be going back to his place, and I wished we had had time to go there together. I wanted to see where he lived, where he slept. I just didn't want to miss a chance to know more about him. But now I was feeling self-conscious about texting him. I didn't want to seem clingy. It wasn't such a big deal to text him a quick hi. I knew that, but I didn't, of course. And I watched the screen of my phone and the clock on and off until Stuart finally came in. During her treatment, Stuart told me all about her upcoming move to Hawaii. On top of the perk of getting to live there, her long-awaited promotion to staff sergeant had also come through. And she spoke enthusiastically about her partner, Stacy, who ran a small business designing and selling these cute floral dresses. She's going to set up one of those little shops right on the beach. She's convinced she's made for beach life, Stuart said, and beamed. She was optimistic that Stacy's business would surely do better in a year-round beach town than it did here near the border of Georgia and Alabama, almost 5 hours away from the coast. Stuart kept talking a mile a minute, her head in the cradle and her voice muffled. She winced as I applied extra firm pressure. She was always full of knots, but she could handle the pain better than most of the people I'd had on this table. I've heard the housing on Post is really nice and very affordable. I shared what I knew from my father and a couple other clients. I reminded Stacy that we're going to be living by the Post, since it wouldn't be easy to live on Post, Stewart said, between her deep breaths, absorbing the bodywork. I did find a cute house only a few miles away. It is a small garden for the dogs. I felt bad for not thinking about what I had just said before I said it. I knew that, in reality, gay couples weren't particularly welcome living on Post together. It blew my mind that Stewart could serve her country the same way a straight woman or man could, but she might be denied the community support that a straight soldier would have. Seemed to me the don't ask, don't tell protocol really meant don't care, won't respect. The military needed to catch up with the times. Things were changing, slowly, but overall, the Army hadn't been very supportive of the LGBTQIA+ community. Too many men in charge still believed that being homosexual had no place in the military. These were sometimes the same men who swept sexual assault under the rug, not to mention an overwhelming number of disappearances and suicides of service members in every branch. I worried about all of the challenges that Stewart and Stacy would face, even if Hawaii seemed like a more accepting place to live than some other military bases. I listened to Stewart talk for the rest of our session, but underneath her every word, I felt a sense of sadness. I wished this world were more fair for Stewart and her partner, and for all the other people I didn't know, but who were suffering for their own reasons. I felt a little guilty that I was eager for the massage to finish, so I could check my phone and see if Cale had texted me. I needed to connect with him any way I could. I needed to feel closer to him. Even just to see his name on my phone screen, to reread old texts he had sent me. 3 more minutes. That seemed excruciatingly long. I didn't think Stewart would notice that I was already doing a sort of cool down on her, gently moving my hands over her skin to relax her after the deep tissue massage. I waited it out for 1 more minute and ended her session with 2 to go. I made a mental note that I would add 5 extra minutes to her next session. I grabbed my phone from the shelf the moment my hands left her body. No new messages, but I did have a missed call from my dad. Well, that could wait. I didn't feel like talking to him. The only thing on my mind was how Cale's mouth tasted like his coconut chapstick, and how hard he laughed when I tripped over a piece of tile in my bathroom that he promised to help me fix. Our scrambling bodies had moved from my bedroom to my bathroom, to the kitchen and back to bed, still not able to let go, to stop touching, to stop exploring each other. We had become masters at intimacy, without crossing the line into fully hooking up. Karina? Stewart's voice made me jump. Talk about the real world. My phone dropped to the floor, the picture of Cale and me open on the screen. Bright as hell in my dark room. Oh my God, sorry. I hid my face under my hair as I bent down to grab it. I'll let you get dressed. See you in the lobby, I told her, leaving her in privacy. When I stepped into the hallway, I had to bite my lips to stop myself from laughing. Typically, I would freak out over something like that and die from embarrassment. Was Stewart uncomfortable or thinking that I had lost my mind? This time, my brain didn't go there the way it normally did. It naturally thought about how obsessed I was becoming with Cale, and how big his smile would be when I told him about my phone mishap with Stewart. Chapter 58. It's so good to see you like this, Stewart told me, squeezing my hand as I passed her a pen and her receipt. I smiled and we both laughed. I felt that I had shared something very personal with her. See you next week, she said. I was pleased for Stewart and the change ahead, but I was going to miss her a lot. And business-wise, usually an afterthought for me, I could hear Molly lecturing that losing a client as reliable as Stewart was going to affect how much money I would be bringing in each month. And what was I going to do about that? I cleaned up my treatment room as fast as I could while still being thorough. I threw towels in the laundry and checked the bathroom to make sure it was clean enough and that the caramel apple-scented wax burner didn't need another cube. Oh, how I loved the fall. I didn't wait for Elodie to finish with her client. I had managed to miss her return home this afternoon and was relieved not to have to answer her questions about Kale. I just shouted a general bye in Molly's direction and left. I checked my phone as I walked outside, turning into the alley. On days like today, I was thankful that my house was only a 5-minute walk from work. As I skirted around a pile of new mattresses outside of Bradley's shop, I started to text Kale to see what he was up to. I stared at the phone, feeling the chill of cool air. It felt like rain was coming. I really hoped that I would see Kale tonight. Seeing him would instantly lift my spirits. He was the brightest star in my muted gray life. The texting bubble popped up. 3 little gray dots were there. Then they weren't. I looked up from my phone and down the alley. I could see Kale's Bronco parked on the street right in front of my house. I used my hands to brush my hair back into a ponytail and straightened my shoulders, excitement bubbling through me. But when I reached the end of the alley and went across the street to my house, my eyes landed on a black Buick parked in my front driveway. I didn't need to see the U.S. Army sticker on the bumper to know it was my dad's. I felt as if someone had poured a bucket of cold water over me. I was nervous now, unsettled. I almost wanted to turn back around and hide behind the line of dumpsters in the alley and wished I could text Kale to tell him to get rid of my dad. But I knew that was something I had to do. I walked faster and saw the screen door open when all of a sudden my dad's voice boomed through the yard. I could see the shape of my dad in my doorway, his back turned to me. His hands were raised like he was yelling. Kale's voice was next.
You don't have a fucking clue, Kale shouted.
Chills ran from the tips of my fingers to the tips of my toes, and something in my brain, some minuscule detail of a buried memory, told me to stop there right before I reached the lawn. I stepped next to Kale's truck for cover, wanting to assess what was happening. They were going at it, and they were going at it hard, each word a blow.
How dare you try to keep my daughter from me,
my dad accused.
You need to stay away from my family.
Kale held his ground, and his voice was firm enough to make me want to hide from what I was hearing.
Maybe she doesn't want to be around you. Have you ever thought about that? You've got some nerve showing up at my house, Martin, especially after what happened in Afghanistan. Why do this when you're about to get out? You don't give a fuck about me getting out. This is about you keeping your hands clean and your retirement.
The rest of the words flew around me too fast to catch until I heard Kale say,
You're a fucking criminal!
Afghanistan. Criminal. My daughter. How dare you? Stay away. I leaned into the side of the truck and crouched down, small, a feeble attempt to protect myself from what I was hearing. I couldn't make sense of all of it, other than to realize that my dream of happily ever after had just ended. And a nightmare had begun. Chapter 59. I walked toward my porch. What was this? What was happening? I could barely feel the ground beneath me as I moved across my lawn. My heart ached, and with every breath, I became more certain that something was very wrong. I hated that my mind was already doubting Kale. The fact that he knew my dad, before I introduced them at dinner, and that something had gone on between them. He never mentioned it, and that confused and hurt me. And my dad, of all people. Could I trust either of them to tell me the truth? The steel wall around me that I'd lowered over the last couple of weeks was rising again. My defenses were on high alert. As I climbed the porch stairs, my father stepped into the house, still with his back to me. When Kale caught my eye, my dad tracked his gaze and turned, abruptly.
Karina!
My dad boomed, pointing at Kale.
Why is he here, in your house? Why the hell is this guy sitting inside your home when you're not here?
My heart was pounding. What the hell is going on? Kale was starting to look different, like a stranger again. Something about the way he stared forward, not appearing to even blink, made my blood run cold. My father's stern voice made me want to vomit. I overheard everything you just said, Tell me what this is about, I demanded. And when neither of them spoke, I startled myself by yelling, Tell me what the fuck you're talking about, right now! I had never screamed in my house before. Kale reached for me, but I jerked away.
Karina, I can tell you what's going on. Your dad's...
With an icy tone, my father cut Kale off before he could finish.
You've already overstayed your welcome, Martin. She's my daughter, and I don't need you to speak to her. Karina, we can discuss this when he leaves, which will be now.
No one is leaving until I get an answer, I snapped at my dad. My hands were shaking. My whole body was shaking. This is my house. I wasn't sure if I was telling them or reminding myself. My father's eyes bore into Kale's.
You're so close to that medical discharge you want. And if you don't watch it, we'll all be fucked. Your career will end before you even leave Fort Benning. What are you going to do with a dishonorable discharge, boy? I'm not your fucking boy, and I'm not fucking afraid of you.
Kale stood, his back straight while talking to my father. It shocked and impressed me.
There's nothing else you can do to me, or to Mendoza, to any of us. And how much blood is on your hands, Sergeant Martin?
My dad growled at him before turning to me.
Did he tell you he's on the verge of getting himself a dishonorable discharge? What kind of future would you have with him, Karina?
Kale's attention was on me, and his eyes were glassy like he was holding back tears of anger.
It's him, Karina. He's a senile narcissist who has convinced himself he's some sort of god and he's nothing.
Kale's veil of composure was gone. I stood there between them as their truth swirled around me, trying to stick.
Are you denying that you came into my office shivering your leg all bandaged and signed your name on the bottom of that page, Martin? You signed official documents. You even got a promotion after that. You signed it, Mendoza signed it, Lawson signed it. All of you. And now you decide almost 2 years later to come back and try to backtrack?
My dad was in full-on officer mode. It was sickening to watch the way he knew just how to warp the tone of his voice to whip soldiers into submission, like he sometimes did with Austin and me. Kale spoke in a detached, steely voice.
He was sent into the wrong house. Shots were fired at him because no one did a proper surveillance. You know that you neglected your command, keeping yourself entertained back at camp while Mendoza, Lawson, and I went in. He didn't know who was inside when he fired. Soldiers and civilians die, on and off the battlefield. It's a part of the job. It's what you signed up for. I'm sorry this happened to your friend. At least he's still alive, unlike most of mine.
In this moment, I saw clear as day why my mom grew to hate the man standing in front of me. His skin was ashy and fell in loose folds around his jaw. That, combined with his shock of white hair, made him look like the ultimate villain. Like the kind of man who conjured up demons or ate children alive. Compared to him, Kale looked wounded and hurt, more hero than anti-hero. He looked no older than 18.
I did what I had to do to help you. All of you!
My dad pointed an accusing finger at Kale.
I watched you pull a body into camp, barely able to walk yourself. I did what I believed to be right, and I have a hell of a lot more experience with this than you do. You were protecting your own position. You didn't give a fuck about us or our lives. You only cared about your retirement and not jeopardizing your legacy.
Kale snarled at my dad.
Tell your daughter how you used the lives of young men and women to get promotions and medals. Tell her how you constantly threatened us, making sure we never so much as whispered your name. My fucking friend is losing his mind over the guilt, and he can't even talk to anyone about it.
Kale stepped toward my dad. They were now face to face.
Are you hearing yourself, Martin? You're a soldier, I'm a soldier. We've seen and done things most people can't dream of. If you're haunted by what you've done, you're a piss-poor excuse for a man.
Kale stood silent as my father continued his demeaning rant.
You know what will really haunt both of you? If he can't feed his family and has no paycheck, no healthcare, nothing. That's haunting.
My dad's thick finger pressed against Kale's chest. I took a sharp breath. Kale didn't react.
You really want to get back at me, Martin? Sleeping with my daughter isn't the way to provoke me.
Kale didn't flinch, but my nerves and anger erupted.
What the hell are you talking about? I exploded. You don't know anything about us or what we're doing. My dad had the nerve to slap us both with an accusation that wasn't even true. This is bigger than whatever childish game you two are playing, Karina. This man can't be trusted. He's an unreliable liar. He's put people in danger. Real danger. You and your brother should keep your distance.
My dad's golf shirt was pulling, untucking from his jeans, and his skin was red, all blotchy. Like a liar. Or an innocent man on trial. I couldn't tell. Like my mom said, there's always more than one lie for every truth. I looked at Kale again.
At this point, you don't even care, do you, Martin? You have your bags all packed to move up to Atlanta, and what, are you going to take my daughter with you?
He laughed, then continued.
I know you bought a house there. Word travels fast around here. You know that better than most.
Words burned in my throat, failing to escape. There was no way that what my dad was saying was true. You bought a place in Atlanta? I turned to Kale, but he was speechless, and my confusion turned into devastation. Did you? I couldn't hide my shock as he nodded. When were you going to tell me? I wanted to touch his face and turn his cheek toward me so he would have to face me, but I was too stunned to move.
You knew I was leaving,
he said simply, as if we were discussing what to eat for dinner. His jaw was clenched, but his mouth was flat, nothing to read. I couldn't tell if he was putting on a show for my father, acting like he didn't give a shit about me, or if he just really didn't. He was just the other day offering to take me to his place here in town. Not in fucking Atlanta. I hated being gaslit. But I wasn't even sure that's what Kale was doing, since there was zero emotion in his eyes. He didn't even care enough to manipulate me. That doesn't answer my question, Kale. When are you going?
Soon.
He barely spoke. I couldn't breathe, but managed to ask.
When? Not soon enough,
my dad replied for him. I couldn't look away from Kale, not even to tell my dad to shut the fuck up. When I searched Kale's eyes, I couldn't find what I was looking for. I couldn't find anything. I felt my anger too intensely to control it. I needed a reaction from him, so I pushed against his chest, but his body didn't move at all. Even the way the fabric of his uniform felt against my palms triggered me. The green and tan had always been an omen to the bad shit in my life. I pushed Kale's chest again. I needed reassurance that the person I'd come to know was in there somewhere, that I hadn't invented this. As my hands touched his chest, his grasped for mine, latching onto my wrists.
Do not touch me like that,
he said calmly, looking into my eyes as he lowered our hands, then let go of mine. The words went straight to the deepest part of me and filled me with shame. He took a step away, and stopped near the entryway of the kitchen. I immediately shrank. What was I even doing? I couldn't believe that I had just pushed him like that, and in front of my father. No matter my anger. I couldn't look at my dad because I was afraid that I'd see more of myself in him than I could accept. I apologized to Kale immediately and loudly, but he didn't seem fazed. He was blank, shut down, a vacant soldier replacing the man I had come to know. Kale was slipping away from my little living room.
None of us are right in the head anymore.
Kale's words tore me open, and I struggled to stay in self-preservation mode. I didn't believe Kale was being honest with me, and my dad was a notorious liar. I felt like I was in a funhouse, mirrors cut in weird shapes bent to confuse you with a distorted version of reality. What you thought was reality. Everything around me was warped. Both of you just get out. My voice was shaky in its delivery, but the words came out confidently. Kale remained unfazed. Wow. The pain lashed at me again. My dad persisted in pushing my boundaries.
Karina, we need to resolve this before it becomes more of a problem.
This isn't my problem, it's yours. I pointed at both of them and said the words through gritted teeth. Kale barely made eye contact. I couldn't believe his audacity to not even look me in the fucking eyes. "Get out. Now," I said to them both again, but I was looking directly at Kale. He was still staring straight ahead as Elodie's voice rang through the chaos. "Martin, you're here again," she chirped, having no clue what she had just walked into as she bounced across the living room to give Kale a hug. Her face shifted from excitement to confusion as he stood unmoved by her enthusiasm. He suddenly took a step, then another, and his body moved like a robot, not stopping or even glancing toward Elodie as he walked out the front door. I couldn't bring myself to watch him leave, so I focused on my father. "You too. Get out." I looked directly into my dad's beady eyes and gestured toward the door. Kale's truck roared in the background. I felt sick to my stomach. My father looked at Elodie, opened his mouth, then snapped it shut. He was summoning his outward charm, something he had mastered for the sake of appearances.
"I heard your soldier will be home soon."
My dad's tone was soft as he touched Elodie's shoulder. They weren't close, but he had always been nice to her when she tagged along for dinner.
"I hadn't heard this. Is that true?"
She sounded genuinely shocked at the news. Her eyes blinked a few times as my dad nodded.
"I'll be going. Good to see you, Elodie."
He managed a smile for her as she awkwardly waved goodbye and disappeared into the kitchen, leaving me alone with my dad. A scowl returned to his face as he addressed me.
"I'll see you on Tuesday."
His tone told me that it wasn't a request, it was an order. This, whatever the fuck this whole thing wasn't close to being over. Instead of feeding his ego and airing my grievances as I felt them, I waved at the door again, not giving him the satisfaction of taking any more of me. I held my breath until he was gone and made my way into the kitchen, where Elodie was pacing back and forth, waiting for me. Her arms immediately went around my body, and for the first time since I met her, I didn't have the energy to pretend that everything was okay. Chapter 60. When I woke up the next morning, my head was throbbing. I couldn't exactly recall how I got to my bed last night, but had a faint memory of Elodie's voice shushing my sobs as they wore me down to sleep. I remember her standing in the doorway with a look of pure worry on her face, the thin line of hallway light disappearing with her as she left the room. I had tossed and turned the entire night. My room was too hot, then too cold. I curled into a ball to comfort myself, covering my mouth to calm the heaving. I had no tears left, but my body seemed to think that I did. I couldn't stop. As soon as I would slip into near sleep, Kale's face would flash in my mind. When I couldn't sleep, I checked my phone, too many times to count. My finger hovered over his name repeatedly, deliberating whether to block him or delete his number, but at the same time, desperately hoping for a single text from him. Nothing. And I had the strength to do nothing except toss my phone to the other side of my bed. Even in my dreams, I couldn't escape him. Was my heart actually broken? Was Kale a liar? He wasn't even part of my life a few weeks ago. My reaction to all of this was an overreaction. I was preparing to lose him eventually, but this felt different from the loss I knew was coming. I imagined that pain would be a longing ache for him, inflicted by distance, something remedied by texts and calls here and there. But this was altogether different. I stretched my arms out in front of me as I lay in bed. My body felt sore everywhere. The morning was misty and overcast, and I couldn't guess the time. How long had I slept? I found my phone under one of my pillows and squinted through puffy eyes to read 8:24. I needed to get up and ready for work at 11, but didn't know how I was going to deal with today's shift. I untangled myself from the disheveled mess of sheets and comforter, and got out of bed. As I walked out of my room to the bathroom, I heard the TV in the living room and knew Elodie was already awake. After a quick check of my face in the bathroom mirror, I splashed my cheeks with water in a futile attempt to revive myself. Kale's tube of cinnamon-flavored toothpaste sat unopened on the counter. I cringed, feeling a pang of regret. He never even had the chance to use it. But maybe that was for the best. As I stepped into the hallway, I heard Elodie giggle, clearly amused by whatever she was watching. That laugh always lifted my spirits when we hung out and binged on TV. She had kept me from plummeting last night. She hadn't asked any questions. She just hugged me as we sat on the couch, as I cried. She was here for me last night in a way that I had never felt in a friendship before. I wanted to thank Elodie and say that I was sorry that I hadn't told her about what was going on with me and Kale.
"You're awake,"
she smiled, turning toward me as she lowered the volume on the remote. Head hurt. It felt like it had been days, not hours, since Kale and my dad were here. Elodie looked surprised as I practically crawled to her on the couch, snuggled up next to her, and wrapped my arm around her. She covered me with the blanket she was using, and I cuddled in closer. We didn't say anything at first, and I couldn't think of where to begin or just how much I wanted to say. I owed it to her and myself to at least try to explain what was going on.
"Do you believe in coincidences?" I asked. "Coincidence is simply what happens."
She paused.
"Are you asking me about serendipity?"
Serendipity. Kale coming into my life seemed like a series of unfortunate events. I didn't want to admit it was anything more than that. "A coincidence is like bumping into an old friend at the movies, or thinking about someone you haven't heard from in a while, and then seeing their name pop up next to a text." Could it really be a coincidence that Kale and my dad and Austin and Mendoza and Philip and everyone, literally everyone, were connected? I took a breath and continued, "The fact that my dad and Philip and Kale are all in the same company feels like a bizarre circumstance."
"It does. But you get to decide what that means for you, Karina."
I stared at Elodie as she spoke, trying to take in how wise and comforting she was. People often underestimated her ability to read situations. Yes, she seemed young and bubbly and adorably French, but her instinct and perspective blew me away. Though I was ashamed to admit it, my first impulse was to lie again, to protect myself. But Elodie was trying to be a friend to me, and I desperately wanted to let her. "Kale was here the whole time you were gone, and we've been seeing each other. Well, not dating, but we were hanging out since the day we met." My cheeks flushed. I barely had any energy, but the bit I did have was pure guilt.
"Did you sleep together?"
"I'm not judging, only curious," she asked me. I shook my head. I couldn't meet her eyes anymore, so I leaned my head onto her shoulder again. "We didn't. He didn't even try." I stopped mid-thought and had a realization. Well, that should have been my sign. He didn't even want to sleep with me.
"Be glad you didn't then,"
Elodie said softly. I nodded in agreement. A little corner, all the way in the back of my heart, the only part that hadn't gone numb, began to ache again. Kale's face flashed through my mind. Him smiling at me, us in my kitchen, us falling onto my bed. The way he paid attention to the smallest things I said, the way his eyes lit up when we shared a favorite song. I think the other things we did were more intimate than sex. If we had only hooked up, this would be so much easier to get over. I shuddered. How did I get myself into such a mess? She took that in.
Yeah, the sex is the easy part, isn't it?
We nodded at each other.
Do you want me to tell you that I think you shouldn't see Martin anymore, and that things sometimes don't happen for a reason?
I sat quiet for a moment. I don't know why it feels like my world is ending, I said softly, as Elodie's hand stroked my shoulder and down my back. I felt like a child curled up next to her. I've only been this hurt once in my life, when my mom left. Maybe I should just get used to the fact that everyone who comes into my life will leave at some point. I saw my life as a revolving door. I got over my mother. I would surely get over this. What am I even saying? I continued, closing my eyes. My mother's face flashed behind my lids. My mom leaving was so much worse. Kale's a stranger. I can't believe I'm even comparing them. Elodie breathed in a deep breath. I couldn't look at her when she spoke. Loss can't be measured in that way. If it was that simple, life would be much easier. Her words sat with me, and as they settled, I felt a bit of relief in my lungs. People are selfish, I sighed. I've always known that. I think I lost my mind a bit. People do things they don't plan to do when they're in love. I let out a cackle, overcompensating for the possibility of truth there. I'm so not in love. Well, it might feel just as painful as if you were, she said, pursing her lips. I thought Martin was a nice guy. I really did. I'm sorry that I introduced you to him. The size of Elodie's heart was so admirable. I wondered if things would have been different had I confided in her about Kale from the start. None of this was her fault, and I wanted to tell her that. I sighed. I lied to you about Kale. I'm the one who's sorry. She shook her head, and a piece of her hair fell from the low ponytail resting just above her neck. She tucked it behind her ear. Karina? Elodie's bright blue eyes met mine. She lifted one hand and rested it on her stomach. Do you think your dad was telling the truth that Philip will be home soon? My heart ached. I wish I knew. Has Philip not mentioned this to you? No, he didn't. Elodie's tone was solemn. Did Kale say anything? I shook my head, but wished I had something to tell her. It made me worry how easily she could be hurt, and with people like Kale and my dad around her, I wanted her to be more guarded when it came to trusting others. If I ever found a way to look at my father again, I would try to find out what was going on. It was the least I could do for my only friend. Elodie tapped her finger against the tip of my nose, making my eyes close and my face crinkle. Let's not change this to me. Her smile was a sweet and knowing one, and I realized I hadn't even asked her about her trip. Okay, but first you have to tell me about Atlanta. Did you have fun? Were the wives nice to you? She smiled, giving my arm a playful squeeze. Absolutely fun. But it was very crowded everywhere, and the shopping was too expensive. I had a good time, but it will be curious if they ask me to hang out again. They will. I looked up at her. If they don't, it's their loss anyway. You need to eat, Elodie exclaimed, jumping up from the couch. She disappeared into the kitchen and returned a moment later with a bowl of Cheerios with sugar sprinkled on top. Elodie knew it was my favorite breakfast, something my mom had made any time of day or night when she knew I needed a pick-me-up. It was still my comfort food ritual. I looked at the time on my phone. It was already 9:45, and I was due at work at 11. How was I going to work a shift today? I was in no mood to be with anyone. I am going to call Molly, I said between bites of cereal. I know I've taken time off this week, but I just can't go there today. I know Molly's going to freak, but I just can't do it. Don't call her, she'll kill you. And she's already mad at me for not working my full week, Elodie exclaimed, eyes wide. I'm off today. I can cover for you. Are you sure? Yes, I decided already. You helped me so much when I was sick from the baby. She smiled. I'm going to shower now and get ready. After Elodie left, I had the house to myself and could either crawl back into bed and be miserable or try to keep myself distracted while still being miserable. Giving other people the power to make me feel this way was exactly what I had been avoiding my entire life. Kale made me break my own rules. I should have known that sooner or later, he would reveal himself to be exactly what he was, what we all are, the most selfish of creatures. I'd never met a person who wasn't selfish. I shouldn't have ignored that little voice inside that told me we were headed for nowhere fast and we were going to run out of gas anyway. The problem was he made me feel comforted and understood, less alone in the world. The highs of being with him were so consuming that the voice of reason in my head was drowned out. It was fucked up the way he cracked me open, turned me into a freaking maple tree, my deepest private thoughts pouring out of me and into him. He soaked them up, but kept the tap closed when it came to himself. And he turned out to be just another liar in my life. Even so, it was a hard pill to swallow. My body clung to the memory of his touch, the hot flash of his warm lips brushing my skin, his mouth trailing down the nape of my neck. I lifted my hand to touch there. Even my own touch reminded me of him. When he touched me, I didn't know where I ended, and he began. Time was going impossibly slowly. It was barely 11 in the morning on day one post-Kale. I couldn't get him out of my mind. He made his home there with a constant presence. And worse than that, there were traces of him everywhere in my house. As I dug through my drawers for something light and easy to wear, I saw the satin pajamas. And his gray PT shirt was folded neatly next to them. Even my fingers ached for him. Fuck him, honestly. Maybe if I cleaned myself up, had a shower, and brushed my teeth, I might feel a little less zombie-like. At minimum, the tasks would distract me. I walked to the kitchen to throw my dirty laundry into the washer, then went into the bathroom, where I grabbed Kale's stupid, gross toothpaste and tossed it into the trash can. When I missed, it hit an already loose wall tile that cracked into pieces, hitting the floor. Fuck this house, and how it knows just how badly I need him to fix my life. And then I thought about my own advice to my childhood friend Sammy, after she and Austin broke up for the fourth time. I reminded her that he was only a teeny tiny little part of her life, that in 5 years, he wouldn't matter. No one in our school in Texas would matter to us. Not even the cool kids would matter when we were grown-ups. She said she'd never fully be able to forget him because he was my twin, and our laugh was the same. We got distant after she and Austin split, and her marriage soon thereafter made it harder to keep in touch. Eventually, she faded from my life like everyone else had. I turned on the music and looked into the mirror. My dark hair washed out my tired face more than usual, and I thought about coloring it. I crouched down and opened the cabinet. Sure enough, I had a box of dye. A lighter brown than my hair was now, but not too drastic of a change. Screw it, I decided. I had the house to myself for the rest of the afternoon, and I'd been thinking of changing my hair for a while anyway. It would be a few months until I could afford to go to the salon to get it done. I ripped the box open and followed the instructions, even though I knew how to do it by now. I mixed the dye, shook the bottle, and applied it carefully to my hair over the sink. I had lost count of how many times I'd changed my hair color in my life. My mom let me use temporary dye, a dark blue, when I was 12. I would never forget the look on my father's face when he came downstairs to see my mom and I both with deep blue streaks in our hair. I set a timer for 20 minutes on my phone and rummaged through my cabinet to see what other luxuries I had. I found a face mask to use after the shower and grabbed my nail file and tweezers. I leaned my face to the mirror and brushed my eyebrows with a little brush meant for tooth flossing. My thick brows could definitely use a little shaping. I held the tweezers up and brought my face closer to the mirror. In my reflection, my hand was shaking, so I traded hands. The right hand was even worse, and because I had already committed to hair dye with no guarantee of the outcome, I didn't want to risk messing my eyebrows up, too. I wasn't that far gone. I stood outside the shower, impatient for the water to heat up. Steam began to fill the bathroom after only a few seconds, and that annoyed me.